भवतु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. सो टुडे वी हैव कम टू द फिफ्थ वल्ली सेक्शन 5 second valley of chapter 2 of the Kathopanishad. The very subject matter of all Upanishads, as I mentioned, is knowledge about the Brahman. And the reason behind that is that the essential fact, the essential notion in our Vedanta about the ignorance is that we have not understood the reality as it is. Therefore, once we are told what is real, the intellectual pursuit of knowing what is real will then lead us eventually to go beyond the intellect so that we understand and accept the reality as it is. So, while we understand that intellect will not take us to the reality, the reality has to be pursued through the intellectual understanding only. So this is not necessarily contradictory. It may seem like I am saying things that are contradictory, but it is not. The only idea is that that reality cannot be grasped through the intellect, but the idea that that reality, what it is, has to be understood by the intellect. So today some problem is there. Is this on? You want me to use that?
Yeah, please. Okay. I don't know why. I think it's not straight.
I can make it straight.
Yeah, I think. Or beach may be over. It's cooling. I think that's the problem.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll give it one more try. So that reality is, can you hear me?
Yes.
Higher? No, he has to make it higher there actually. So can you hear me in the back row? Okay. So therefore what I was saying is that although that Atman, Brahman, or the Supreme Consciousness, or the Pure Consciousness, whatever we call it, is not a subject of intellectual pursuit. It cannot be grasped by the intellect. It cannot be understood because it has no attributes which can come into the understanding of intellect. Yet, the entire spiritual journey is through the intellect. And therefore, all the notions that we will see today in this fifth valli, fifth section of Upanishad, are going to be logical. Therefore, logic is very important in order for us to come to an intellectual understanding of what that reality is all about. That is not the end game here. But the intellectual understanding is important, and confining to the logic is important, because that which is illogical we will not accept. Now, the teacher here, the Upanishadic teacher, in this fifth valli, will actually talk about the Atma Swarupa, the nature of the Atman, the nature of the Self. And this nature of the Self is indicated in two ways. Number one is that it is all pervasive. That is to say that this Atman, the so-called Self, the Supreme Consciousness, pure consciousness, is not only restricted in time and space, so it is not localized, but it is pervasive everywhere. And therefore, the transcendental nature of the Atma is indicated. Then we may feel that, yes, it is transcendent, it is pervasive everywhere, but where will I find it? Do I have to make a journey? Do I have to go somewhere else to find it? And therefore, the very imminent nature of Atman, imminent nature of the Self, will have to be described, otherwise we will be wasting our life in searching for it somewhere else. So therefore, both transcendental and imminent nature of Atma is indicated in this valli. And as we go through this, it will become very clear. The third thing that is indicated is, although it is pervasive, and because of its pervasive nature, it is going to be in contact with all the entities of this world. In fact, none of the entities can exist without its own existence, Self's existence, the consciousness existence. It will be pointed out that in spite of that, the consciousness remains immaculate and pure. That is to say that it does not superimpose on itself any of the properties or any of the qualities of that which it is enshining. So just as the light in this room remains inherently pure, just as the space in this room remains inherently pure in spite of all the entities that it is touching, all of us are probably smelling differently, and the air will smell like that. The air will actually, because of the association, will gather that smell. But we cannot say that the space is now smelling, because the space does not accept any of the impurities, any of the gunas, any of the qualifications that are present in the room. In fact, we can say that the space is not necessarily confined to this room. So just as when the walls of this room come down, artificially we feel that this is the room space or the hall space. But the moment the walls are taken down, we know that even though we were calling it the hall space, it was the total space alone. We cannot say it was part of the space. Be careful. Because in order for it to be part of the space, space will have to be divided. You cannot divide the space. Therefore, the room space is none other than total space. Similarly, it will be pointed out that the consciousness within us, the indweller in the body because of which we are alive, the very life principle is not just within us, but it is also present everywhere else in equal proportion. So it is a huge homogeneous mass of consciousness which remains pure and immaculate at all times, under all circumstances, and at all space. Okay, so with that background, let us look at that first mantra that we have seen again. You repeat after me. पुरमेकादशद्वारम् अजस्य वक्रचेतसः अनुष्ठायन शोचति विमुक्तस्य विमुक्तस्य विमुच्यते एतद्वैतत्. So here, Puram Ekadasa Dwaram. So this body of an individual entity, the individualized entity, is compared with a Puram. Puram means a city, a town. So in the old days, as you know, these towns were protected by a fort. And the fort will have several openings through which transaction can be done during the daytime, and come night, all the gates will be closed. So similarly here, the body has 11 gates. So those 11 gates we looked at and named them yesterday. Those are the two eyes, the two ears, the two nostrils, make it six, and then the one mouth. So that is seven gates. So these are the seven gates through which transaction happens. Through the eyes, ears and nose, through the eyes and ears, information comes in. So there is an inward traffic, but not an outward traffic. Through the nostrils and the mouth, there is an outward traffic and inward traffic both. So therefore, these are seven gates. Then there are also two gates through which we ejaculate. So therefore, those two makes it nine. And then there is this nabhi. When the child is in the womb of the mother, all the nourishment is attained through that nabhi. So therefore, gate number 10. And then it is believed that there is also an 11th gate that is shut at this moment, but at the time of death, it opens up. And that is the crown of the head. So that's all, those are the 11 gates. Then the teacher says, this consciousness, chetasaha, this consciousness, which is actually the indweller in the body, because of which the body gets the sentiency, that because of which the body appears to be sentient and alive, that consciousness is avakra, avakra chetasaha. Avakra here stands for changeless. So therefore, this consciousness remains changeless, although it is dwelling in a body and the surrounding which is continuously changing. So the entire world of creation is changing. Sam sarati iti sansara. Sarati means that which is changing. Sam means that which is vigorously changing, continuously changing. So sansara itself, the meaning of sansara is that which is changing continuously. Therefore, nothing here is permanent. Everything is changing. It is that consciousness which is changeless. So the changeless residing in and through all that is changing ever remains changeless. So that consciousness is avakra, it is unchanging. And then it is also ajaha. Ajaha means unborn. Now birth happens in time. That is why we all have birth dates. There are three things we have to remember when we go to any office and we have to fill out a form. Right? What is your name? What is your last name? Middle name is optional. Then the second question is, are you a male or a female? And we have to identify. Now there is another box also. But once we have to identify whether you belong, you do believe whether you belong to one or the other gender. And then the third question will be, what is your birth date? Those are three definite questions. Then of course all details are there if you would have to remember passport number or the driver license ID and all that. We may not remember. We can pull it out from the pocket. But the three things we always remember. Name, gender and birth date. So birth date is in time. And anything that is in time will end. So that which is born is bound to die. That which has initiated its existence is bound to end its existence. There is nothing in this nature that any one of us have experienced which is deathless. Everything has a death. Everything has a time-bound existence. Therefore the teacher here says, it is ajas, ajaha. This consciousness is not born. That is to say that it has not a time of death. Therefore it is continuously existing. In fact, it is a substratum on which the entire world is projected. Then the teacher says, anusthayana sojati. One who understands this and then actually does the exercise related to this knowledge, so therefore one who meditates on it, one who does mananam in it, one who reflects upon this fact, such a person, na sojati, he does not become agitated in any manner, because he or she will attain peace. So all the agitations born out of dependent, time-bound existence are gone, and therefore such a person will not come under any illusion of impermanent existence. Because of what? Because of the identification of myself with permanency, myself with that consciousness which is permanent, exists at all times. And therefore, vimuktascha vimuchyate. And therefore, such a person will become free. Free from what? Free from all the anxieties. Free from the notion that I am limited. Free from the idea that I only exist in time and space. Free from the idea that I will gain something which will make me better. Free from the idea that whatever I have, I will lose. None of those thoughts will come, because that person comes to recognize that there is nothing that I can gain, there is nothing that I can lose. I cannot be any happier than what I am. I cannot be any unhappier than what I am. No difference can happen, because I am trupta, I am complete. I am not incomplete. And therefore I won't look for any object that will make me happy. I will not be dependent for my happiness on outside world. My happiness and contentment flows from within me. The teacher says, etat vaitat. That is what you ask for, Nachiketa. That Atma which is the indweller in the Anatma. That consciousness which is dwelling within this changing body, whether it is the gross body, the subtle body, or the causal body, the existence of that changeless consciousness is what you had asked for. Therefore, I am giving you the knowledge that is actually what is to be known. Etad vaitat, that alone is the truth. That alone is to be known. That alone is to be pursued. Now when we talk about change, some technical things we should know. Because we think, what is changing? So there are different types of changes that are actually mentioned in our Shastra. What is it? Asti, Jayate, Vardate, Viparinamate, Apakshiyate, and Vinashyati. So what is the English translation? Jayate means born. Vinashyati in the end means death. So everything that is born has a death. Jayate, Vinashyati. Okay. Then Vardate means growing. Then Viparinamate means maturity. And apakshiyate means decay. So in the old age, we all decay. And in the very first day also, we start decaying anyway. But the old age, it is much more visible. So earlier, we can say it is vardhate, it is growing. And then aparinimate, you know, we are actually maturing, hopefully. So these six changes are mentioned. So all, none of these changes are possible in consciousness. That is the idea. Okay. Now we go to the second mantra. Hansa Suchi Shad Vasurantariksha Sad Hota Vedisadatite Iti thi duronasat nu sad varasat desat vyoma satya goja rutaja adrija rutam bruhat. It seems to be a very complicated stanza, but actually really not that complicated. So here the idea that the teacher is trying to convey is that that consciousness which is pervading in this body, deha is the gross body, dehinaha means that which is residing in the body. So that consciousness which is residing in every individual body is the same in all the bodies. So therefore, my consciousness is not different from your consciousness. It is the same consciousness which is residing in all the bodies. That idea is being indicated here in this mantra. So therefore, with that knowledge, if you look at the mantra, it will make perfect sense. What is it? Hansaha. So Hansaha here, Hansa means, Hansa also is used for swan. But here the meaning of Hansa is the sun. So the sun is effulgent object, is probably the most effulgent that we have known in our life. There are more effulgent stars in the outer space, but we are not close to it. So for us, the most effulgent object is the sun. That sun, Suchisada. Suchisada means that sun is actually dwelling in the outer space. Sada means seated. You can say here dwelling. So therefore that sun is actually existing in the outer space. Vasuhu antariksa sada. Vasuhu here means the air. So the air is actually present in the in-between space. So we know now that scientifically 14 miles up to 14 miles from here, air is there. After that, there is no atmosphere. So where the sun is beyond the atmosphere. In between, for 14 miles, the air is present. Hota Vedisata. Hota here stands for fire. So fire actually is present here. Atithi duronasata. So therefore, the guest dwells in the house. So the sun is dwelling in the outer space. The vayu is dwelling in the antariksa. The fire dwells in the vedi, the altar of sacrificial fire. The atithi, guest, duronasata, dwells in the house. And Nrusata, Varasata, and then the Nrusata, the indweller, the dweller, indweller in the body, the Dehina that was indicated in the former mantra, that indweller dwells in Varasata. Varasata means that which is, those are gods. So in all the entities that are known as gods, okay, all the phenomenal forces, we can say, There also he exists. And abja, goja, rutaja, advija, rutam, bruhat. And the same entity is present in goja, in the earth, rutaja, in all the sacrificial offerings, adrija, in the mountains, rutam, and bruhat. That entity is indeed bruhat. It is the all-pervading entity. It is the same entity which is present in all these different things. So therefore the pervasiveness of the Atma, pervasiveness of the Supreme Consciousness is indicated by so many examples. So if you don't understand the examples, we can say that it is there which is everywhere. So therefore the transcendental nature of the Atma, the Paramatma, the consciousness is indicated here, as I said earlier. Okay. That is to say that the consciousness, although it is dwelling in the body, is something distinct from the body, not limited by the body, not confined by the body. It is in the body and outside the body. So this is everywhere. So therefore the real thing to say is that I am existing in the consciousness, not to say that the consciousness is existing in me. So in order to indicate the pervasiveness of Brahman, pervasiveness of my real self, this mantra is written by the Rishi. Okay. Alright. Now in the next third mantra, the idea is that Atma is present in a manner that it gives sentiency to all the bodies. So the sentiency is given to the gross body through the subtle body. What do you mean by that? Okay. So we have to understand that there is a difference between the gross body and the subtle body. Number one is, of course, gross body is gross, therefore it will come in our cognition. We can see the gross body, we can interact with the gross body. The subtle body, which is made up of mind and intellect, is not, we cannot see mind and intellect. But it has a property that is not there for the gross body. What is the property? The property is that it can actually catch the consciousness and reflect it. So therefore the Supreme Consciousness, the pure consciousness, the light coming from the Brahman, is actually reflected off of the mind and intellect. So the first reflection is in mind-intellect equipment. And that mind-intellect reflection is reflected on the gross body. And because of that, gross body appears to be alive. Okay. So therefore, can you say that the mind-intellect is alive? Is mind-intellect alive? No. Because if you say it is alive, then you have to go back to Tattva Bodha and start from there. Okay. So according to Vedanta, everything is jada other than Brahman. The properties may be different, but they are all jada. So the causal body is jada. Subtle body is jada. Jada means insentient. It is matter. So the causal body is jada. Then subtle body is jada. Then gross body is jada. Then what is sentient? The Atman, the Brahman, the living principle, the indweller in the body, the Dehinaha is alive. It is because of that that we appear to be alive. But the gross body does not have the capacity to reflect that light, reflect that consciousness. Therefore, on its own, it will not be able to remain alive. It is only alive because the mind and intellect are present, and the mind-intellect equipment as a mirror is reflecting the light. So imagine that you are in a dark room and the room is constructed such that none of the sunlight is available to light up the room. So therefore, very craftily, we position the mirror outside the room so that the mirror can catch the light of the sun and reflect it appropriately into the room. Now the room is all alive. The property of the mirror is to reflect the light. But the room cannot reflect the light. Room does not have that capacity, doesn't have the property. Now what happens when you take the mirror away? When the mirror goes away, room will be again in the darkness. As long as mirror is there, room is lighted. Therefore, the room appears to be lighted because of the mirror. Similarly, the gross body appears to be sentient because of the reflected sentiency that is coming from the mind-intellect equipment. So the subtle body has the capacity to catch and reflect the consciousness. Okay. So then what happens at the time of death? What goes first? Gross body or the subtle body? So think about it. The room was dark to begin with. Then you put the mirror and now room will become lighted. If you want to remove the light, what will you do? Will you go after the sun and kill it? No. It cannot be killed. So what will you do? You will remove the mirror. The mirror is gone, room is back into darkness, body is gone. So therefore, the subtle body decides when to go at the time of death. Without the mind and intellect telling, I want to go, really speaking, death cannot happen. Therefore, the gross body also dies. It was dead to begin with. It was only appearing to be alive because of the reflected consciousness. Now that the reflected consciousness is no longer shining the body, therefore the body is dead. Now the dead body is... But okay, what happened to supreme consciousness? When you take the mirror away, what happened to the sun? Sun withered away and went away. No, sun is still there. So therefore the supreme consciousness is still there. Has the supreme consciousness lost any of its property? Actually it has no property, but let's assume. No. The reflecting medium has gone away, and therefore reflected light, reflected consciousness is not available for the body to be enlivening. But no change has taken place in the supreme consciousness. Correct? So therefore this idea is being indicated here. So the primary chit-abhasa, chit means consciousness. Abhasa means appearance. So the mind and intellect appears to be conscious because it has the capacity to catch and reflect the consciousness. So that is called a primary chidabhasa. Then it reflects and shines the reflector consciousness into the gross body. Therefore it is called secondary chidabhasa. Chit abhasa. Consciousness appears as if it is conscious. Abhasa means illusory. It is not real. It only appears to be so. It is called abhasa. So therefore the primary chidabhasa is the subtle body. Secondary chidabhasa is the gross body, And the Atma is not Chidabhas, it is Chit, real Chit. Okay. If this is understood, then I think this mantra will be understood. Okay. Let us chant the third mantra. Urdhvam pranam unnayatya panam pratyagasyati madhye vamanam asinam visve deva upasate urdhvam pranam unnayati. Urdhvam means upward, unnayati sends prana. So prana goes upward. So the exhalation here is indicated as prana. Apanam pratyak masyati, gasyati. So the apana is thrown downwards. So therefore the apana is inhalation. So this exhalation and inhalation continues in the body. Madhye vaman asinam, in the middle of that, vaman asinam sits what? The Atman. Visve deva upasate, and all the devas worship that entity. Now what is the meaning here? So now that we have understood the primary Chidabhas and secondary Chidabhas, it will be easy to understand what is the meaning here. What is the meaning here? The meaning is this pana and apana continues to function, although pana and apana by themselves are also what? Jada. So therefore figuratively we say that abhi iske to pran chale gaye. Prana is gone. But really speaking, prana is gone, is not going to go anywhere. The functioning of pana and apana is gone. The ability to breathe in and out is gone. But the body is still there. So what is gone? Can you say that the pure consciousness has gone? It has nowhere to go, unfortunate. Everything is filled with consciousness. Where the consciousness will go? Consciousness is looking for the room for it to go somewhere. You're also getting bored, you know, one place all the time. Consciousness cannot go anywhere. Okay, then has body gone anywhere? No, you can see the dead body right in front of you. Dead body hasn't gone anywhere. So what has gone? The mirror has gone. The subtle body has gone. And the subtle body has gone to look for another appropriate gross body. So therefore, this is actually indicative of, it is just a suggestive mantra that talks about life after death, punarjanma, which is one of the bases of the Hindu philosophy, is indicated here. Okay, Visvadeva Upasate. So that adorable one, that one which is actually in the center of the body, is the one because of which everything is functioning. It is a supreme consciousness because of which we temporarily took on this body, subtle and the gross body. But that alone is actually existent, everything else is not really existent. It is only existing in a relative manner. That is, it has an empirical existence, but it does not have a real existence. Understood? Okay. Now, this can be indicated by a very classical method that Vedanta uses, which is called the Anvaya Vyatireka method. So Anvaya means similarity, Vyatireka means dissimilarity. And the Anvaya Vyatireka method is used in Vedanta as well as in Sanskrit language, in a grammatical form also it is used for many, many reasons. And so in short, we can say Anvaya Vyatirek can be classified into three things. What is it? Three things, three different scenarios can be indicated. If X is there, Y is there. And if Y is there, X is there, then it is called Anvaya. If X is there and then Y is there, and Y is there, X is also there, this is called Anvaya. That is to say that if there is smoke, there is fire. But if X is not there, Y is not there. It is Vyatireka. That is to say that wherever there is smoke, there is fire. If there is no smoke, there is no fire. This is the Anvaya Vyatireka, principle number one. If X is there and Y is there, but if Y is not there, X is still there. This is another example of Anvaya and Vyatireka. So many examples can be given. Anyway, so why am I saying this to you? Okay. So therefore we have to say that let us suppose in the dream state, in the dream state, we are aware of the dream body and dream world. Where is the gross body and the gross world? It is absent. In the dream state, dream world and dream body is there. But the gross world and the gross body is absent. Who is shining the dreamer experience of the dream world? The Atma, the pure supreme consciousness, is shining the experience of the dream world to the dreamer. Where is the gross body? Gross body is absent. Gross body is not recognizable in the dream world. The gross body is only available in the waking world, waking state, not in the dream state. So the gross body is absent. So what is to be indicated? What is indicated is that the common feature in the waking state, in the dream state, is the presence of that consciousness, presence of that Atma, which experiences the dream, because of which the experience of the dream and the waking world is possible. But there is no necessity for the gross body to be present in order to have the experience. Therefore, that is the Vyatirek, and the presence of the Atma is the Anvaya. That is to say that the gross experience of the waking state and the subtle, the experience of the dream state, is dependent on the presence of Atman, the consciousness. But the consciousness does not require the presence of the gross body or the subtle body for it to exist. So it has an independent existence. Another method, another simple example I can give you is, let us suppose that somebody has an allergy. Now, you know, you want to find out what is the allergy? Why am I allergic? What am I allergic to? So let us say that you eat some particular type of lentil which you suspect is the cause of my allergy. So you eat that lentil or whatever it is, some dal or whatever, and you have the allergy. So now you will conclude, therefore, it is likely that my allergy is related to this food. But it is not a convincing proof. It is a necessary proof, but not a conclusive proof. So therefore, you stop eating that food, then your allergy goes away. Now it is a conclusive proof that you are allergic to that food. So the first part is anvaya. The second part is vyatireka. Simple. Okay. With that background, let us look at the mantra. Asya vistram samanasya. Sarirastasya dehinaha. Dehad vimuchyamanasya. Kimatra parisishyate. Etad vaitat. Asye, from this, vistra samanasya, when it has left, what has left? Sarirasthasya dehinaha, that which was indwelling in the body. So that which was indwelling in the body has left the body. Dehad vimuchya manasya, where vimuchya means freed, where that entity is freed from the body. Kim atra parisishyate, then what remains behind? This is a question, so don't try to answer the question. Now there are certain things, certain facts that we have to think about here. And that is that, what has really left? So I already told you that it is the mental, mind, intellect, subtle body that actually lives. Neither the gross body has gone anywhere because you can see it right there. Nor has the consciousness gone anywhere because consciousness cannot go anywhere. Therefore when... Okay. Now another question. Is the body still in consciousness or not? Yes. Our body is not conscious though. Now that is to say that if your dead body is still in space or not, you can say no, it is not in the space. No, it is in space. Consciousness is everywhere. Consciousness is subtler than the space, therefore space itself exists in the consciousness. So don't equate consciousness with the ability to function. Consciousness is not necessary. It gives the ability to function, but it is not equal to ability to function. So therefore that is what is really indicated here. What goes is not the consciousness, nor the gross body. What goes is the subtle body. So the reflecting mirror has gone. Once the reflecting mirror has gone, gross body loses its sentiency, apparent sentiency, which was borrowed anyway. But the real sentiency was because of what? That supreme consciousness. So therefore, although you can say that the subtle body gives the ability to the gross body to function. The subtle body gives the ability for the gross body to function. The gross body is alive only because of not the subtle body, but the source of light, the original source of consciousness, which is the supreme consciousness. Now you say, why is this all complicated here? It's not complicated. The teacher is actually trying to talk about, give us the indicators for what? Atma Swarupa. So what is the nature of the Atman? That is, it is being pointed out. Based on our daily experiences. Therefore, the Atma Swarupa is being pointed out. That is all there is to it. And the Atma Swarupa is that which is non-changing. It is the inherent truth because of which everything appears to be sentient, etc., etc. That is all that is being pointed out. Etat Vaitat, the teacher says, this is what you had asked for. That alone, this alone is that. He doesn't say this alone is Brahman or anything like that. He just says that. Because to call it Brahman also is actually coming back from the highest truth. No name should be given to that which is attributeless. Giving a name itself is attribute. That is why, you know, when some child is born, some people, some parents name them Anami. Anami means nameless. But that also becomes a name only. Because, you know, all the children cannot be Anami. Otherwise, the father will say, hey, Anami, come here. All the 9 children will come. Which one? Anami is also becomes a name. So, it is just to indicate that the Supreme Consciousness dwelling in the body is actually nameless, changeless, attributeless. So that perhaps we can remember that every time we call His name. And therefore that name is given. Okay. Kimatra parisishyase, therefore, is not a question. It is only to indicate that therefore what remains is what had been there to begin with. This ephemeral existence of the worldly things and beings is only transitory in nature. That pure consciousness has been there forever. Is here at this very moment and will be there forever. No change in it is possible. No transfer in it is possible. No speed in it is possible. No movement in it is possible. Jyon ka tyon, it will remain as it is, impeccably pure. That is the supreme truth. And that is the nature of Brahman. That is what Upanishad is trying to convey. Okay, let's chant the 5th mantra. Na pranena apanena martyo jivati kaschana itarena tu jivanti yasminne tavupasritau. Na pranena, na apanena. Martyo jivati kaschana. Although figuratively we may say that we are alive as long as we are breathing. It is the breathing that keeps us alive. We are able to inhale and exhale. That inhaling and exhaling is actually our ability because of which we get oxygen. An absence of oxygen definitely leads to death. So figuratively it is true. But the teacher points out that the ability to breathe in and breathe out is also because of what? Itarena, something else. So don't say that the ability to breathe in and breathe out is because of subtle body. Its capacity, the subtle body's capacity is also because of what? It is because of that Supreme Consciousness. Therefore, itarena tu jivanti. It is because of that you are alive. Yasmin eta upasita. So these two both depend on the existence of pure consciousness. What these two? The gross body as well as subtle body. Or you can say it pana and apana. Ability to breathe in and breathe out. Or you can say the subtle body, gross body, both meanings can be taken. It is because of that life appears to be It is because of that that we superimpose life on that which is inherently jada, that which is matter. Okay, now here maybe I will digress a little bit because I think there are some scientific points that we can make. So what is the difference between a scientist who is trying to investigate and do research as to how, where did the world start, how did the world start, how is everything came into existence, and how is life created? And a philosopher or a spiritual person who appears to have their own theory. And what is the difference between the two? So the scientist actually will not believe in the existence of the consciousness, because consciousness cannot be observed. The field of science actually moves only in the field of observation and measurements. In fact, experiments have been done where a dead man was weighed before and after he became dead. So if you weigh the body and it is 100 kilogram, and then after death, immediately you weigh the body and it is 99.9, then you can say that the weight of the Atman was 0.1 kilogram, therefore the existence of Atma is indicated. Now this is assuming that Atma can go somewhere. That consciousness has left the body and gone somewhere, like they show it in the Hindi movie. And to their amazement, they found that, actually speaking, the dead body gained weight. So therefore the conclusion was that Atma actually has a negative weight. Which cannot be scientifically true. Therefore they gave up the experiments. So the simple fact is, can you really weigh the subtle body? Forget about the Atma, forget about the consciousness. It is a weightless entity. Gross body can be weighed. How can you weigh the subtle body? So if you cannot weigh the subtle body, the mind-intellect equipment, and don't think about the brain. I'm talking about the ability of the mind and intellect to function. Brain is a matter only. Then how can you weigh the consciousness, the supreme consciousness? It is impossible. Another thing we have to understand is, science now says that for any observation to be accurate, the observation platform has to be independent of that which is being observed. For any observation to be accurate, the observation platform has to be independent of that which is being observed. If the platform on which the observer is standing is not independent of that which is being observed, then the observation will be erroneous. Now you tell me, how are you going to observe the consciousness? Because any platform anywhere you can think of is in consciousness alone. You cannot have an independent platform for observation. Therefore, science does not believe in consciousness. But they cannot neglect life. So they know that there are rocks and the mountains and the water. They don't seem to be alive. Yet on the other hand, the trees and the animals and the humans and all the other species seem to be alive. So where did this life come from? So the scientists say that it has come from matter. That when the Big Bang happened and the matter was created, the circumstances were very different. The pressure and temperature was very different. The mass and lava and that, you know, the everything was fluidic at that time, and so it so happened that during that transition from that plasma containing matter to this solidified planets and stars, stars are not solidified yet, etc., etc., that life evolved because the circumstances were correct. And therefore, consciousness came out of matter. Life came out of matter. That is their understanding. And they say nobody can refute that because you cannot prove it otherwise. So therefore we are wise. So the philosophy, the Vedantic theory is that it is exactly the other way around. Matter came out of consciousness. Life did not happen as a secondary thing. Consciousness is not secondary. Consciousness was primary. And the matter was created, relatively speaking, empirically speaking, out of consciousness. So that is the major difference. And I can go on, but anyway, so this is to be understood because we are talking about death and all that. So, where is life and where is death in this whole spectrum of consciousness? What is life and what is death? What is our true existence and what is our relative existence? And with respect to my absolute existence, what is my relationship to my Lord, let us say? And in my non-relative, in my relative existence, not an absolute existence, what is my relation to God? These are all these philosophical, spiritual questions that are raised in Vedanta and answered. And none of those answers actually are contradictory to the modern science. Therefore, Vedanta does not contradict science. And since it does not contradict science, it does not contradict logic. Because you cannot argue and say that science is not logical. Science is very much logical. So therefore, even though Vedanta was, the Upanishads were written some thousands of years ago, none of it is inconsistent with the logic that today's science provides. And therefore, this is the best pathway for us to come to apprehend the reality intellectually to the best we can. And then we have to take the flight. Once we are convinced about what is my real nature, then I can take the flight into that reality, which I know that I am in it right now also. Okay. Alright, so na pranena apanena martyo jivati kaschana itarena tu jivanti. This itarena, this something else, is consciousness. There are actually scientific convocations and conferences on consciousness. And so one of the theory that has come out of is that consciousness really does not exist. That consciousness is actually nothing other than moment to moment memory that expands to for a certain amount of time. So because the brain is the way brain is designed, there is a certain reception and retention of memory. And that, unfortunately, we come to understand that that memory is consciousness. It is actually nothing like consciousness. Okay, so we can accept whatever we want to accept. But you think about where the logic actually leads you to. So here the teacher actually is trying to answer all those questions only for the benefit of Nachiketa, who has simply asked, some people think that there is something after one dies. And some people think there is nothing after one dies. You tell me, because you have seen both the sides, because you are the Yamadut, you are the one who is taking people across. Therefore, you tell me what is the truth. And so therefore, that which is existing after that, Yamaraja also understands, is nothing other than that Supreme Consciousness. Therefore, he started giving the answer to the Swarupa of that nature of that Brahman, which is attributeless. Okay. Hantata idam pravakshyami guhyam brahma sanatanam yatha cha maranam prapya atma bhavati gautama. So here the teacher in Yamaraja feels that he has still not explained adequately what is the swarupa of that Supreme Consciousness. And that he has really not answered the question, what happens after death. Therefore, he again tries to elaborate this concept of what happens after death. Also, he wants to talk about the subtle Brahman. And what happens to Jivatma after death. Now, before we go into the mantra again, I would like to give you some information that will be helpful in understanding. Now, let us suppose that the person who dies is a realized person. So a person has become jnani. He has attained vidya, he is realized. What happens to him or her at the time of death? What happens to the gross body? Gross body will go into Pancha Mahabhuta. Whether it is buried or whether it is burnt or whether it is hanged or whatever it is done, Pancha Mahabhut, so therefore this body is made up of Pancha Mahabhut, five essential elements. It will go into back into that five essential elements. What will happen to the Supreme Consciousness? Supreme Consciousness? It's all nothing other than Supreme Consciousness alone is there. Therefore, nothing happens to Supreme Consciousness, not an iota of difference. What happens to the subtle body of the jnani? Now, the subtle body is the effect of causal body. What is the reason for the causal body? Ignorance. And ignorance leads to what? Vasanas, desires. That was the cause for the subtle body to be around. So therefore, what happens to the subtle body of the jnani, one who is realized? Does it go anywhere? No. It also merges into totality. So we have to say that Tejas goes into Hiranyagarbha. Merges into, it doesn't go anywhere. It's done. And therefore this Mahatma has merged into total Supreme Consciousness. So therefore we say that for just a person, therefore there is no life after death. Okay. What happens to an Agnani? What happens to somebody who has remained in darkness and remains ignorant? What happens to the gross body? Merges into Pancha Mahabhut. Just as Jnani, no difference there. What happens to the total consciousness? Remains as no difference there also. So the only difference is in what? Subtle body. So what happens to the subtle body? It travels in search of a gross body. And when a suitable gross body is obtained, the subtle body enters into that gross body. And another life starts. That is the philosophy anyway. So then people ask, how long does it take? Well, people are more worried about what will happen after that than what is happening right now. Abhi to chinta nahi karte. But after that, what will happen, that they are worried about. Now let me tell you one thing. Regardless of whether you are a jnani or a jnani, whether you realize or you don't realize, you will not be able to sense anything when the gross body is not there. Please understand that all the experiences are because of the presence of the gross body. Although mind and intellect is very much required, the mind and intellect therefore themselves are incapable of giving us any experience. Therefore, even though there may be 100 years before I find a suitable body, supposing I die without knowing, I will not know. Because the concept of time will not be there. No experience will be there. And therefore the question as to how long it takes is irrelevant. Therefore if you ask a Mahatma, Mahatma will only smile. Because the irrelevant questions have no real answer. Therefore the Mahatma will smile. So therefore here, what happens to an ignorant person is actually indicated. What happens to the ignorant jivatma after death is indicated. So the jivatma, the subtle body, will travel and look for another gross body. So let us chant. Hantata idam pravakshyami. Guhyam brahma sanatanam. यथा च मरणं प्राप्य आत्मा भवति गौतम हंत ते इदं प्रवक्ष्यामि द मीन्स टू यू प्रवक्ष्यामि आई विल एक्सप्लेन आई विल टेल यू इन डिटेल टू यू आई विल एक्सप्लेन इन डिटेल व्हाट विल यू एक्सप्लेन हाँ Hanta idam. Hanta also here stands for well. I will explain very well. Idam. This I will explain. What is this? This is guhyam brahma sanatanam. This knowledge that is very guhya, which is very secret. Now you can say, oh see, this is a problem. I will not get that knowledge because it's such a secret knowledge that only Yamaraj can give us, you know. So what can I do, a poor me, I am not like Nachiketa, I cannot go to Yamaraja, or I didn't get any guru in my life and all this. What happened, I just got married unnecessarily, I should have not gotten married. All those ideas, stupid ideas come into mind. Guhyam is secret. One meaning is secret, and it's also a right meaning because this meaning is so secret because it is so subtle. See, gross knowledge is easy to grasp. But subtle knowledge is not that easy to grasp. So therefore, if you say, only, you know, because you are ignorant only because you have so much papa are there. Go to the Ganges and take a deep 3 times, Bhagwan ka naam lo, papa will go, and then you will become realized. We are willing to do that. Chain pakad ke, in spite of all the dirty water will go 3 times. That we are able to do. Or somebody will say, go up to the Kailas. Have you not gone to Kailas? What are you? How can you then realize? I say, okay, Kailas. I cannot walk from here to the parking lot, but I will try to go to Kailas. Then another Mahatma comes and then he says, you don't have to go anywhere, you are that right now, you said. Mahatma is useless, you know, he is not giving me anything. This is like going to the doctor and the doctor says, no, you have clean sheet of health, nothing is wrong with you. Then you say, but no doctor, sometimes I have headache, you know. So the doctor will also give you something, okay fine, take this. So therefore we only go, even Mahatmas will say, okay then, oh I see, I understand now. So you do japa. You do fasting for 1 day. All those jadi puttis are given to because we are not ready to accept the subtle knowledge. So Guhyam here stands for subtle. And not only this knowledge is subtle, it is actually the most ancient, Sanatanam. Why is it most ancient? Because the entire creation has come from that. So even when you are asking me the question, the teacher seems to indicate that Nachiketa, the very fact that you are asking me the question is also empowered by the same truth. The same consciousness is actually enlivening the thought, enlightening the thought, because without that you would not have been able to ask me. It is that is etat vaitat. So therefore this Brahma, this entity called the Brahman, which is the most ancient from which everything has come, that entity is the secret. That consciousness is the source. That consciousness is your real existence. Yathacha maranam prapya atma bhavati gautama. Prapya means having obtained. Having obtained the death. Bhavati, oh Gautama, Gautama is another name for Nachiketa. Atma bhavati. You will attain the Atman, the knowledge about the Atman. Now this can be misunderstood and misinterpreted and all that. In our Vedanta, in many religions, the ability to go to heaven or ability to realize, if they can be equated, no, really there is no equation there, but let us say that the ability to realize the same as going to heaven, let us say, for the time being, then it is assumed that that can only happen after death. Vedanta doesn't say that you have to die in order to enjoy the freedom. In fact, Vedanta insists that you should not die. You must get this knowledge in this very life so that you become jivan mukta. You become free while living. What is the point in being free after you die? That you are going to be anyway. So Vedanta laughs at it and says, you stupid, you just enjoy life. After coming to the knowledge, you will enjoy life because it will eventually it will come. You will attain the sukham and santi. You will attain peace and happiness, which is not transitory but permanent. The peace that we experience is in between two disturbances. The happiness that we experience is in between two tragedies. The peace and the happiness that the teacher here is trying to convey is that where all the tragedies are non-existent. That doesn't mean that life will be smooth. Sam sarati iti sansara, everything is going to change anyway. That doesn't mean that a person who has a knowledge will never become sick. That doesn't mean that if they have sickness, the sickness will go away. That doesn't mean that they'll be able to fly like Hanumanji or Superman. No. They will essentially remain as we are. And their experiences, their observations will be the same as ours. But they will not superimpose reality on this ephemeral world that we seem to be superimposing. That is the only difference. So please understand, because a lot of people have been misguided by this. A lot of people think that realization is an experience. Realization is not an experience. Why? Because it is not that we lack the experience of Advaita. What is the problem? The problem is the consciousness alone exists, But it appears to us as compartmentalized, therefore we have accepted the existence of multitudeness. So we experience dvaitism, we experience duality, I am different from you, etc. And therefore we have accepted that duality exists. Vedanta says that actually duality doesn't exist, one alone exists. So we feel that, oh, I have to get that experience. So if I do this sadhana or I do this upasana or I get up in the morning and do this every day at 4 o'clock, eventually after 10 years I will have the experience of oneness. Now, there is nothing wrong with upasana. All spiritual practices are important, not for the experience though. All the spiritual practices are important so that the mind will be ready, the intellect will be ready, and we become capable of accepting the truth as my own. That is all there is to it. So why am I saying that experience is not required? Because the experience of Advaita everybody has. There is not a single person in this room who can claim that, no, I haven't experienced Advaita. Challenge me and I will prove it to you. What experience do you have every day in deep sleep? Oneness. So therefore it is not the lack of experience that's the problem. It's the lack of knowledge which is the problem. So therefore we should not seek experience. So therefore the teacher says, yatha cha maranam prapya atma bhavati gautama, indicates that you will die to this ephemeral world of plurality. And when you die to this ephemeral world of plurality, you will wake up to the reality. That is why Gurudev used to say, he used to joke, but he used to say that, oh, one time I was going in an elevator and a lady came and he said, Guru, I don't have time. Can you explain the Vedanta? And he said, I'm going from the first floor to the fourth floor, so I don't have much time. So I'm thinking how to answer the question. So therefore, she was just getting out on the fourth floor or third floor, because Gurudev was going on the fourth floor, according to his story. So he says, wait, Vedanta is detach and attach. So detach from this ephemeral world, don't give it any reality, and give reality to that which is real. Detach and attach. That is how he explained the Vedanta, which is actually the sum total of all the knowledge. So therefore here the teacher is saying the same thing to Nachiketa. That what is required is, stop giving reality to this ephemeral world of relative existence. Okay. Yo nimanye prapadyante sariratvaya dehinah sthanu manyenu sanyanti yatha karma yatha srutam yoni manye prapandyante sarirvatvaya dehinah sthanu manye anusayanti yatha karma yatha srutam. Okay, here also let us talk about some things which will make it real clear. So here the teacher actually is giving two different ideas in mantra number 7 and mantra number 8. Okay, what are those two ideas? So the first idea is, what happens to an ignorant jivatma? We have already seen, but a little more elaboration will come. And the second thing that he will talk about in the 8th mantra is more information about that Brahman. See, a real teacher, when he is talking to the student who is really desirous of knowledge, always feels that he has not done a good job of explaining what is Brahman, because Brahman is something that cannot be explained, put into words, cannot be conceptualized, etc., etc. So the teacher puts forth the best effort he can, and then every now and then he feels that, oh no, I think I can add something, I can add something. Because his whole chapter is like that only. I can add something. So therefore, here the idea is again indicated. And one thing that we have to understand is prapadyante yoni manye prapadyante. Prapadyante means gravitates. Here really for the Supreme Consciousness there is nothing to gravitate into. But the subtle body will go towards the gross body. So there is a relative motion is present. So in Bhagavad Gita also, Bhagavan has said, I don't remember the exact sloka, but that just as the breeze will carry the fragrance of the flower with it, similarly the subtle body will actually be after death be carried to an appropriate gross body for it to go and in the indweller. Right? So here he says, yoni manye prapadyante is not for the Supreme Consciousness, but yoni manye prapadyante is for the subtle body. Not for the gross body also, it is for the subtle body. And having made that progress, having gravitated to that, sariratvaya dehinaha, it actually enters into a gross body as an individual existing entity. Sthanu manye anusanyanti. Now how does it really go into that gross body, and why did it choose that gross body only? Anusanyanti, according to the desires. Yatha karma yatha srutam. And according to the past actions, and according to whatever knowledge is consumed and accepted. So therefore in our sastra there is this concept that from life after life we are given a chance to rise in our own spirituality and come to appreciate and accept who I really am, and that until that happens I am going to go through this cycle of birth and death. So the concept in this Vedanta is not of eternal hell or heaven. The concept is only temporary hell and heaven. Eternal is only freedom. Freedom from all the ups and downs. Freedom from the notion that I am incomplete. Freedom from the fact that the notion that I am only temporarily here. Freedom from the idea that I will die. Freedom from the idea that I can gain something or lose something, etc., etc. Those are all ideas that bind us to this worldly attachment. And therefore here he says that according to the previous karma, according to the previous activities, actions, the motive behind those actions, according to whatever knowledge we have acquired and where we are in our own spiritual progress, and according to the vasanas, we will progress towards a body and we will enter the body prapadyante in through a mother's womb, yoni manye, through a mother's womb, and attain a sariratvaya dehi, attain an individual body, individual cross body. So this completes the explanation of what happens when a person dies. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnaat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.